All right, got a great episode for you here on a Friday. Going to be talking Kyrie Irving. Going to be talking, you know, whether the Nets are going to have to start entertaining a trade for him or not. Following some national media coverage on that front. Also going to talk a little about Paul Millsap making his way back into the rotation here. Took a look at his last game, what to expect from him, and if the Nets should be playing him more. Going to get into it all. But first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I'm Doug Norrie, owner-operator DFSR.com. If you need some projections for FanDuel and or DraftKings, head on over. DFSR.com, we got you covered. We got you every player, every position, every sport. It's all there for you at DFSR.com, keeping the fantasy industry on lock. Thanks for making Locked On Nets your first listen of the day. We're free and available on all platforms. And so you know, this episode is brought to you by Truebill. Truebill is the new app that saves you money. We like that. By helping you identify and stop paying for the subscriptions you don't want or need. You can even negotiate better deals on those you want to keep. Make sure you support our friends over at Truebill. All right. Got a packed Friday episode here. Nets on coming up to a back-to-back coming out over the weekend. So we'll talk a little bit about their upcoming schedule in a few minutes here. But first, wanted to talk about the Kyrie Irving situation. We haven't really mentioned it too much because there hasn't really been any news on the Kyrie Irving front for some time now, except that no news is no news, right? He does not have the vaccine. New York City has not lifted its vaccine mandates. No one or no person or entity seems willing to budge on what the plan is here, whether for themselves, organizationally, or citywide. There's kind of three separate entities converging into why, or and their decision making and whatnot, converging into why Kyrie Irving hasn't played so far this year. You have Kyrie Irving, who is unwilling to get vaccinated or does not want to get vaccinated. Then you have the New York City mandates about public gatherings and places of work and where you can and can't go if you're not vaccinated, and that is going on. And then you have the Nets organization that said they're not willing to entertain a middle of the road kind of solution here where he joins them for road games and what. He has the ability, I think, to practice under the city rules around their practice facility. So, but the Nets don't want to entertain that. And so you have these three, you know, the Venn diagram of three things overlapping, and in the middle, it's no basketball for Kyrie Irving. And that's where we are. So we bring it up because we haven't really talked about it, and I don't think there's any news on it, but Shams Charania did jump on the Pat McAfee show earlier on Friday to discuss the situation, to basically give a no update in that there's been no movement on this front. While there had been maybe some speculation or hope or however you want to couch that, that with the incoming mayor changing in New York to Eric Adams, that there he had made some comment, Adams had made some comments in the past that had made it appear as if he was going to revisit the vaccine mandate, and maybe that would lead a path to Kyrie playing. It doesn't seem like that is going to be the case. It feels like he may have walked back those statements just a little bit. So then you land in the zone of, should the Nets or can the Nets trade Kyrie Irving? Do they want to? It's been talked and been reported that they're open to it. Okay, so they're open to it in a way that maybe they weren't at the beginning. That's reporting. So I don't know. We've never heard someone from the actual Nets organization come out and say that. But the kind of industry NBA league wide belief is that the Nets are open to the possibility. And then it kind of, if you believe that to be true, then you have to wonder around, okay, it can be true that they're willing to trade him. It then can be the question of whether anyone, and this, and what I mean by this is whether any team wants to entertain that kind of trade, right? So if we want to add a fourth group to this like problem, I guess we're going to call it the Kyrie Irving issue. And I'm, and when I say Kyrie Irving issue, I mean the issue of him not playing basketball. So I'm not calling Kyrie Irving an issue here. I'm just saying that there is a issue surrounding him right now that's conflating to make sure that he can't, or that he can't and will not play basketball for all these different reasons. So the question is now, do the Nets trade him? Are they better off as a team by, as the season goes on, saying we just need to move on from Kyrie Irving in the form of a trade, and whether that would even be possible? It wouldn't happen right now. I think there's still waiting time around whether or not these rules change, whether or not the mandates change, whether or not Kyrie Irving's stance changed. Shams did say that his, meaning Kyrie's stance had not, on this issue, had not changed. So there had been no movement. He was spotted watching Seton Hall basketball the other day. He was in the crowd for that. But it does not believe, at least Shams reporting, and Shams seems dialed into this situation as much as anyone can be, is that he, meaning Kyrie, is not going to have any movement on that front. There's no sense in doing it now, because, like I said, trading, because things can always change. Like, who knows what the rules change become? Who knows whether there's a heightening or loosening on these restrictions? From that standpoint, it doesn't seem like anyone would really win by effectively selling low on a trade right now, assuming you could get another team into the deal, which is far from a certainty. I think other teams around the league would see Kyrie as a talent, but possibly a headache. And if that was the case, or maybe even probably a headache, and if that was the case, then you can't imagine there would be a lot of assets going back from another team, even if you could make the money work. So I think Nets fans, even the ones that want to entertain this idea that there's going to be this, that the Nets will effectively be able to trade for Kyrie at some point, trade away Kyrie at some point, that doesn't even begin to go into the next question of, like, does anyone even want to trade for this guy? And would anyone ever be able to agree on the asking price? Use the proxy over in Philadelphia for the Ben Simmons situation, which is obviously a total mess for a totally different reason. There's been no movement there, probably for some of the same reasons that the Nets would run into trouble when trying to trade Kyrie, is that you're not, at this point, not just trading for the talent and the contract, you're trading for other pieces that could be problematic for you organizationally. Like, do they see him as a head case? Do they see him as going to come in and submarine some other part, not want to play? You know, these other things that have sort of followed Kyrie around and, frankly, been a part, at least in brief stints, of his time with the Nets. So I actually don't think it's as easy as, even if they wanted to trade him tomorrow or today, even if that would even mean anything. Like, I just don't even know if anyone would ever be able to line up on what the value around this situation is, a la what's happening with Ben Simmons. I think as we get longer into the season, we are going to see this continue to be a problem roster-wise for the Nets, because they've been one of the lucky teams that hasn't, Joe Harris is hurt, we talked about that yesterday, but they've been relatively healthy around the two key guys in terms of Kevin Durant and James Harden, but they're playing crazy minutes right now with a huge workload, and that does tend to lead to injury. I wonder if the conversation here changes if one of those two guys were to get hurt, and we really saw a cascading effect on the firepower for the Nets, and whether, I don't think a situation like that would motivate Kyrie to, like, get vaccinated. I don't think a situation like that would even necessarily mean the Nets would soften their guidelines around what they wanted to do, but I think it actually would increase the conversation around whether Kyrie Irving was going to get traded or not. Because right now, if you look down the teams, it's really, you can't, it's hard to piece it together. Just figure out all the teams that people have been rumored for with Ben Simmons. Portland, you know, Sacramento was thrown in there. Obviously, Houston in the past, but that's probably not going to, that was around James Harden. A lot of those same teams would be involved in the conversation and rumoring around Kyrie Irving. And I just don't know if a lot of these teams would see it as the juice being worth the squeeze when it came to what Kyrie Irving was going to bring to their team. So I get that this is a lot of, you know, should they trade Kyrie Irving or not? It's really not that simple. I think if you could do it for a like talent right now, or even maybe a 75 cents on the dollar talent right now, My guess is the Nets would probably just do it and move on. I just don't know if that situation is anywhere close to available. And as we get closer to the trade deadline, we see teams that, you know, are out of it, or teams that are, you know, the playoff picture looks a little different for them. Their trajectory looks a little different. It's sometimes harder to tell earlier in the season what teams are going to land in what spots because you just don't know right now. Like, this, the season is still young. Your playoff picture is anything but set. The play-in tournament does muddy the water on some of this stuff because it gives more teams incentives to win and therefore not want to trade away pieces necessarily, or at least pieces that the Nets would want when it came to making a deep playoff run. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on here right now. I think, though, you know, stemming from the Shams piece of reporting, no movement on the trade front, no movement on the vaccine front, no movement on the mandate front, and I think this is going to be something that we probably revisit with more regularity as the season goes on. Okay. Got to get into some Paul Millsap stuff. Want to talk about a couple of these games that are coming over the weekend for the Brooklyn Nets. First, got to mention our friends over at Truebill. You heard me talk about them at the top of the show. Truebill is really, in this day and age of subscriptions, free trials, you don't know what you're signed up for. You're very likely signed up for a bunch of stuff that you don't even remember doing it. And worse, you're probably paying for it. You have to check out Truebill. It's the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subs that you don't want, need, or you just forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill. Companies make subscriptions really hard to cancel. You've been through this before. You thought you went. I went through this the other day. I swore I canceled the subscription. Swore it. Even my daughter said, "I remember. I saw you cancel it." Nope. Got charged somehow. Truebill eliminates this from your life. They make it incredibly simple. Link your accounts. Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. And Truebill can be your concierge. They can get you to cancel unwanted subscriptions so you don't have to. They'll do it for you. Truebill has over 2 million users and have helped them save over $100 million. That's a lot of dollars. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now, Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Can save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. All right, Friday, we wanted to talk about a little bit about Paul Millsap here. So Paul Millsap is an interesting guy right now in Nets Nation because we have a really small sample size on him. A lot of the in-game quick hitting eye test for Paul Millsap has looked not great. And we've talked about this on previous podcasts too, where we said, you know, that the numbers, at least for him early on, in terms of net rating, I'll get to that in a couple seconds here, but and some of the other sort of analytic type measurements, and net rating isn't even one of them, but just kind of more than just, you know, shooting percentage and points, let's say. Actually was really liking Paul Millsap, and then you'd watch him and it just kind of looked fumbling and it looked slow, especially on the offensive end. And it leads to this sort of like cognitive, I guess, is dissonance around what Paul Millsap is as a player. Then you get him, he's out for a while, he's out for 10 days for personal reasons, ends up coming back, has really played limited minutes. Basically, I think this is all to say we have not gotten a long enough look at Paul Millsap to know whether he can be a really viable contributor to this team. But I'm here to tell you that he definitely can. I was among the group a few weeks ago that was like, what is going on with this guy? It looks slow. It looks like the game has passed him by. It looks, frankly, like a mess at times. There was a reason he was coming in for these really short rotations, and then that was just kind of the end of it. And so I went back, though, and watched again his first rotation against the Knicks the other night, because, one, it was one of his longer runs, right? So he played for, he played 8 minutes, about 8.5 minutes between the first quarter and the second quarter. And I rewatched the game in this section just watching Paul Millsap. Like, what was Paul Millsap doing on both ends of the court that, either was like, and I didn't watch it for the second one, but I think this first one was pretty enlightening in terms of what we're, you know, what we're getting from Paul Millsap right now. So, okay, let's go possession by possession, and just, and I'm, the reason I'm going to do this is because it's going to give a window into why, when you look at his net rating on the season, even in just 179 minutes, he actually has a positive net rating, about 4.5 right now, which if you watch them, at, like that, again, that was a number that no longer surprises me, and it hadn't really over the last two games, but early on surprised me when I first looked at it like 2 weeks ago. I was like, wow, he's a positive net rating. That's crazy, because it looks like a lot of the stuff that's been going on with him has been bad, but it's just actually gotten better in that time. And 179 minutes is a low, isn't a huge sample size, obviously. But there's definitely enough to say that he should, A, be playing at least this many minutes consistently, and that there's actually probably room for growth on this number a little, on some of his overall numbers as well. So if you look at his possessions in the Knicks game, man, the defensive end, it was so good. And then I'm going to reference why I think fans in their minds still have it as that he's totally washed. So to go through them, this is basically every defensive possession. Really good box out on Noel leads to an offensive rebound from somebody else, so it's not going to show up for him in the box score. He had a really good rotation on a double where he was the weak side help on a double, filled up the lane and made the Knicks actually kind of reset their offense. Then they went into a zone, so he didn't have to do much. The Knicks actually kind of start hunting him out a little bit, right? So he gets switched on to Rose, instantly cuts off Rose, where Rose has to pick up his dribble around the perimeter. So totally mission accomplished. And Rose even lost the ball a little bit because Millsap beat him to a spot. Next possession, switched on to Rose again. Great contest on a mid-range. Rose just completely blanks on it, misses the shot. Down on the offensive end, where he's mostly a corner shooter at this point, got into a little bit of the roll game, but not too much. He actually troubled Derrick Rose on an offensive rebound where the rebound ended up going to Bruce Brown, but it was really because Paul Millsap made it difficult for Derrick Rose to grab the rebound. So the stat goes to Bruce Brown, but it was really Millsap's, Pat Millsap on the back for what he did there. They tried to switch Rose onto him again. They tried to switch him onto Rose again on the defensive end. He shut him down one more time. So that's three in a row where the Knicks tried the same thing to isolate Paul Millsap with Derrick Rose. They went completely 0 for 3 on it. Then in the next possession, they switched Randle onto him. He has a great, they switch him onto Julius Randle. Great contest there, and forces Julius Randle on a fadeaway. So far in this first rotation for Paul Millsap, it's been like a total A-plus for him on defense. And when you see, and I got a couple more possessions too, but when you see this, it starts to shed light on why his minutes have been totally net positive this year, even if you look in the box score and you're like, what's going on here? Okay, so they're getting out to the end of the shot clock. He challenges Burks in the corner, swats it away from him. He forces a shot clock violation on the Knicks, totally locks down RJ Barrett on a one-on-one, and forces a steal on that one, where Patty Mills comes up with the steal, but it was all Paul Millsap that they tried to, get him onto Barrett, and that he completely shut that down. Then the Nets give it away on a possession. Emmanuel quickly gets into a breakaway, and Paul Millsap gets onto him in transition, actually forces a miss from quickly, but no one else from the Nets is in transition, and the Knicks get a follow-up. Again, total A+. He couldn't have done anything else, just he didn't have any help. The problem that Nets see, though, is that the offensive possessions and the time that he got the ball were such a mess that it's going to make your eyes believe that this is kind of all going bad for Millsap on this end, because he had one ball that he just completely mishandled. He had Kevin Durant gave him like sort of this mini lob in transition that just completely went. He was wide open under the basket. It went through his hands completely. And then he missed essentially a wide open layup that he got fouled on. He ended up going to the line and making the free throws, but he really should have finished. It was not a very hard foul, and he wasn't able to finish. So if you're a fan watching the game, you're seeing those three plays, the missed layup, the fumbling of the ball in the lane, and the complete doink miss from Durant. And you say to yourself, oh my God, what is going on with Millsap? It's a total disaster. I'm here to tell you right now, folks, it is not a disaster. Paul Millsap is not a disaster. The defensive end was alone worth it for what the Knicks were trying to pull off on him, that he just had none of it at all. And based on what happened on the offensive end, it really feels just more fluky than anything else. Like, just dropping the ball is a fluke. Missing a little bunny layup when you got tapped is, I'm going to call that mostly a fluke. Having the ball slip out of your hands is kind of a fluke. Like, do we think that he's going to drop the ball every time that he is in an offensive possession from now to the end of the season? No. So I don't think we need to worry about that at all. And then when you look at what he's doing on the defensive end in terms of being able to switch on the guys and basically stopping multiple different archetypes of player, right? Derrick Rose, RJ Barrett, Julius Randle are three totally different offensive kinds of players. And Millsap essentially had no trouble with any of it. And so when you look, and that's not fluky. Like, so if we want to take out the one thing that's fluky, these weird offensive possessions that look like a total mess that I don't believe will continue to happen. And some of that could be feel. He missed a lot of time. He hasn't played in a long time. Like, some of that is feel. Some of that feel stuff gets worked out with the defensive stuff that's already working. I'm telling you right now, Paul Millsap should be playing more minutes. It seems pretty obvious to me at this point. I think we will continue to see the minutes tick up here, 15 in that game against the Knicks. Like I said, the first rotation was excellent, and I think we're going to probably, with a little more time from him, see the offensive numbers begin to round out a little bit better. So when you're watching the game, you can enjoy looking at the box score also. But let me, I'm here to tell you, folks, at least from last game with what I watched, Paul Millsap is someone that we should not be down on. Let's put it that way. Seeing people down on him, let's not be down on Paul Millsap right now. I think that is going to end up looking like the way that Nets fans wanted it to look. Okay, going to talk of a little bit what to expect coming in for the weekend here first. Got to talk to you about our friends over at Built Bar. This holiday season, grab the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, but it's even better than a candy bar because it's actually healthy for you. Built Bar, filled with all that holiday goodness, rich, decadent flavors, covered in chocolate, but amazingly low in calories, sugar, net carbs, and fat. Calories low, check. Sugar low, check. Net carbs and fat all low. Double check, high in protein. You get the best of both worlds, delicious and healthy. We've been talking to you about the Built Bar flavors: cherry, double chocolate, raspberry, mint brownie, cookies, and cream. Folks, they started with the flavors to make sure it tasted good, but then made sure the stats backed it up. They make sure you're extra fuel too. So if you're looking to kind of take down some of the weight but keep the energy level up, Built Bar has got it there for you as well. Then you're going to get some of that, instead of using some of those holiday treats that you're so used to, just substitute it with a Built Bar. They have all the same flavors as all those ice creams and pies and all the other stuff, but you know you're not going to feel guilty about it later. Go to Built.com, use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off of your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, got a back-to-back here on Friday and Saturday. Friday night versus the Timberwolves, and then Saturday against Chicago. First time meeting Minnesota this season, and then they did play Chicago once already this year, and you can remember that they got completely blown out by 21 by the Bulls in that game. So hopefully they can make amends for that one. So what to expect from this weekend? Well, for starters, Minnesota been playing really well this season. And I mean, okay, really well for Minnesota. Let me put it that way. Which is to say they're playing well. Like, they're finally starting to realize some of the talent they have. Towns has been really good this year. Anthony Edwards sort of making a leap-ish, you know, after being the first overall pick in the draft, really high-end scorer. Old friend D'Angelo Russell going to return to face Brooklyn here. I will say there's a chance that the Timberwolves will not have Karl-Anthony Towns in this game. He took a pretty bad fall the other night. They had to test him to make sure his tailbone was like intact. Those tests came back clean, but there's probably at least some chance that he doesn't play in that game. He's questionable right now when I'm recording it, but I wouldn't be shocked if they just sat him out that game in for precautionary reasons, simply because, like I said, the fall he took was pretty bad. Like there was some concern for Minnesota that he might have actually messed something up pretty bad. It doesn't look like he did that, but in terms of his status for Friday, as I'm recording this right now, it's not totally clear if he's going to be playing in the game or not. If he is, look, the Minnesota does a couple things really well. They're able to score at a pretty high clip. They have, that's mostly because a lot of their players are offensive minded, and so they're averaging 108 points on the season. The defense has not been that great. Again, when you have Karl Anthony Towns as your best player and then Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell as three of your five starters, your defensive efficiency is usually not going to be that high. Except that this year they've actually been able to make some strides on it. They were getting a lot out of Patrick Beverley, who, you know, they're fifth overall in defense right now. They do take a drop off without Beverley, so I'll say that, and he's still not playing right now. And then Jaden McDaniels and Jared Vanderbilt have both been sort of in and out of the lineup at this point in recent games. McDaniels is questionable for this one. So they've made some strides on the defensive end. I don't believe that their fifth overall rating is probably like totally accurate. I don't think we would put them in the same class as like Utah and Phoenix or even Golden State. Brooklyn's sixth in defensive efficiency right now. But they've made improvements, so they're a more formidable team than Minnesota has been in the past. 11-11 this season, positive point differential at 1.1. In other years, this was kind of a rollover game. That's just not going to be the case here against them. I will say, though, if they don't have Towns, there's a pretty big drop-off. And so could the Nets sort of get a little schedule lucky here if they face Minnesota after Towns has essentially played in every single game this season? That would be a little bit of like schedule luck. It can happen. Injuries happen. We would never root for injuries, but you know, sometimes you can just be on the right or wrong side of it. But, you know, Towns is one of those guys that it's going to be interesting if he does play, because this is the kind of player in the past that can give the Nets problems considering their overall lack of size. Like a really dynamic big who can stretch the floor, who can punish you on the glass when he chooses to. Rebounding numbers, you know, for him have kind of come and gone, and they'd never look as high as they probably should considering his size, but they want to play him away from the basket, and it makes sense. They have other guys that can rebound the ball really, really well on that team. But if this is just the kind of guy in the past that has given the Nets fits, so it'll be interesting if Towns plays. I always want the other teams to have their best guys. It always gives the best version of them, and then allows you to see sort of where the Nets stack up against squads. So we have to be rooting for Towns to play here. Like if you're a basketball fan or a Nets fan, you want to see them play the best. And the hope would be the Towns can play and that we are able to see how the Nets deal with a talent like his on a team that, you know, lacks a little size and has had trouble in the offensive boards or protecting against the offensive boards in the past. So that's what to keep an eye out for Minnesota. We'll see. We'll probably a little more injury news as the day goes on Friday. And then you get Chicago on Saturday. And Chicago, they were able to weather a decent amount of Vooch missing time, which he did. I think he missed four games altogether. And we already saw what happened the first time when they played Chicago, and it did not go very well. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, what adjustments the Nets make in this one. Excuse me. Vooch did play in that one. I believe it was one of the last ones he played before he had an extended absence. We know that this is another case where a good offensive big, surrounded by a team that actually has kind of started to figure it out in terms of their identity, bringing in Lonzo in the offseason, bringing in DeRozan in the offseason. Those moves have been nothing short of absolute home runs so far for the Bulls, who still maintain one of the better records in the league, especially in the East at 14-8. And so, I got a little thing playing here. This is a team that you really don't want to see on the schedule. And between Minnesota being a good team and then Chicago being, well, I mean, Minnesota being like an average, maybe to a slightly above average team if they have Towns, and then Chicago just being a good team, this is a tough back-to-back for the Nets, especially if Minnesota's full strength. We know that Chicago can take it to you on offense. They have guys that are, they have a couple guys that are three-level scorers. Like I said, DeRozan has been awesome this season. They bring in Caruso off the bench that can give opposing guards like a guy like James Harden, just, you know, can drive him absolutely crazy. He's a super strong defender, incredibly smart defender. They brought him in there for the point of attack defense. It's totally worked. He and Lonzo together really give opposing guards around the perimeter a lot of issues, and you don't get a lot of easy shots around there. So this is going to be a tough one also. I think overall, the NBA is tough right now. The NBA is a super deep league. There are not many outs on your schedule. Almost any time, just statistically, numerically, or, you know, probability wise, if you play a back to back, it's going to probably be a tough one. There's what, four bad teams in the whole league: Orlando, Detroit, Houston, Thunder. I guess I'd put the Pelicans in there, though they've been playing a little bit better lately. Like, by and large, you're not getting many schedule outs at this point with the NBA. So is Minnesota and Chicago back-to-back the two hardest games you could face or teams you could face? No, but this is going to be another kind of test between two teams that definitely want to be Brooklyn. Brooklyn continues to have the marks on its back, or excuse me, the bullseye on its back when it comes to teams wanting to beat them. We see other teams are bringing it every single night against them. The energy level does not die down at all. And especially teams that want to prove themselves like these two squads, you know you're going to get kind of max effort. And again, against personnel that the Nets aren't exactly hyper able to to defend against when you get those dynamic bigs into it. And when you get, you know, just, you know, solid guys that can score at a couple different levels. So it will be an interesting weekend. I hope they come out of a 2-0. I would say 1-1 feels like probably a success for where the Nets are. And maybe that's just me being a little too pessimistic. I'm not really sure, but I'm trying to be realistic about this as well. So we'll take a look at what's going to happen over the weekend back-to-back. We'll be back again next week covering what happened over the weekend. Any other movement on Nets front, we'll have it for you. Make sure you subscribe over on YouTube, Locked On Nets YouTube channel. Really appreciate all of the great comments that are getting thrown up over on YouTube, especially over the last Joe Harris one, the one before about the Knicks. Really appreciative of everyone that's made that a really fun experience. This episode and every single one and more is going to be up on YouTube. I will put the link in the show notes. Adam Armbeck will be back next week, so no fear, folks. He's coming back. Just had a little getaway time here over the end of this one, but he'll be back full force coming next week, and he'll have a quote for you then. In the meantime, I'll say we'll be back again next week talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.